Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Oh my goodness, this is episode 300. Can you believe this? This is episode 300. I can't thank you enough for helping me get here. This has been my favorite thing to do for the last 3.5 years, and it's incredible seeing the growth that has happened, the community that's been built, and I just want to thank you. This is very humbling for me, and thank you for getting us to 300. That being said, enjoy today's episode with the great Karen Leland.
In a world where very few people embrace their global identity and seek to understand their neighbors, cross-cultural expert Tayo Roxon is on a mission to bridge this divide. Each week, he'll open your mind with insights from some of the global minds in the world. Get ready, take some notes, and learn how to be the best you that you can be.
Welcome everybody to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's guest is Karen Tiber Leland. I'm very, very excited to have her on the show. Not only have I followed her work for a little bit, I've also read her books, seen a lot of interviews, and you soon hear why. Over the last 25 years, she successfully worked as a management and marketing consultant, freelance writer, keynote speaker, spokesperson, media guest, as well as author occasionally. Karen takes a systems approach to help her clients effectively navigate the wired world of today's business landscape while powerfully communicating the messages to the public, potential customers, and media. She's worked throughout the U.S., Europe, Asia, South America, and a highly diverse group of industries. So you can tell that she's definitely not a one-trick pony, as she says in her website there. But we are going to be talking a lot about personal branding, leadership coaching, brand-centric company culture, and how to bridge the contribution gap. It is with great excitement that I want to welcome you to the show, Karen.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. It was so nice of you to invite me.
Well, the pleasure is mine. The pleasure is mine. For those that don't know, Karen, you had pitched me one of your clients, and I was like, no, I want to interview you. Because I felt like you had done so much to contribute to the whole personal branding space. And in my eyes, you're a legend in this industry. So it's such an honor to actually have you to spend, you know, 30 minutes of your time to explain it. So I hope that this is going to be one of those episodes that people continue to send me emails about and say that it changed their lives.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
With your bio, and obviously we talked about how you've had this extensive experience. I'm curious though, how did it all start with you? I believe you had an interesting time in your life when you were in college and your dad told you to do one career and you said no.
My father was a child psychologist and he was a great person. He's passed away, but he was a very great person, a practical person. And one day when I was in college, I was a musical theater major, and my father sat me down. He took me to dinner and he sat me down. He said, you know, honey, he said, I really think you ought to think about a different career. He goes, you're talented, but you know, you're not that talented.
Wow.
which was true, by the way. And I was beginning to realize that. My father said, I think you should be an astronomer, not an astrologer, an astronomer. And I said, why would I be an astronomer? And he goes, well, you'll always be able to find a job. Astronomers are always in demand. And I was like, Dad, but I have no interest in astronomy. And he's like, it doesn't matter. You'll always be able to find a job. And I was like, Dad, I'm not going to become an astronomer. But thanks anyway. So that was a long-standing, long-running joke between my father and myself.
And I believe the joke was you thought about studying Capricorns and Scorpio.
No, because at first when he said it, I thought he meant, like, I was like, Dad, you mean an astrologer, like someone who studies whether you're a Libra or a Capricorn? He goes, no, that's an astrologer. I mean an astronomer, somebody that studies the stars.
No, that's hilarious. So then, obviously, what did you end up studying, and how did you start?
Well, I did eventually drop out of musical theater as a major of musical. I was a musical theater major and an art minor, none of which are particularly good careers for most people for earning a good living. So I went back to school for organizational development, and I really switched the focus of my study to organizational psychology, organizational development. And, you know, that led into a very long and happy and fruitful and successful consulting career as a management consultant. And then that sort of led into a career as a business writer, and that led into a career doing branding and marketing, and that led to where I am today. So,
wow. And along the way, I know you sort of gave us that outline there. Along the way, what were some of those serious life changes that really caused you to reevaluate a lot of what you did? Because your career path is one of the most unique ones that I've read since I've been doing this, and I'm doing this since 2014. You know, consultant, a freelance writer, a keynote spokesperson, media guest, reporter, author, all these things, artist, actress.
As one of my clients goes, you're a rainbow colored unicorn.
Yeah.
I am kind of a little unusual, and I just happen to have a series of, you know, multifaceted skills that are useful in today's world. But, you know, pretty much I always just pursued a career and did well at it until I was bored. Mm. And mostly the boredom was an intellectual boredom. Like, I just felt like, I mean, you can never learn everything, but I felt like I learned enough, or I'd gotten to a place where I needed a new challenge. So a lot of my career changes are really sparked by that I just need a new challenge. That's a lot of what my career changes happen by. And they've all been pretty consistent. I mean, it's funny because, you know, being a management consultant, being a branding and marketing strategist isn't that different in the way you run your business from being a management consultant. I'm just focused on different things. And, you know, even now, it's been about 10 years that I've been doing branding and marketing strategy and work, and I still do it and I love it. But I notice I'm doing a lot more work these days around how you create inclusive work environments and diversity,
yeah,
particularly from the point of view of diversity of contribution, not so much gender and race, but diversity of contribution.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was reading your book, The Brand Map and Strategy, Design, Build, and Accelerate Your Brand. And the interesting thing you brought up with diversity and inclusion, obviously what I do is cultural competency. I was fascinated with how you were talking about how to make your brand synonymous with leadership, intelligence, and integrity. And you did a great job of just walking us through that. Why do you believe then 2017, given the context of the world right now and the fact that we have globalization as reality, and the fact that digital media is consistently making the world flatter, not the earth, the earth is still round, but the world flatter, why do you feel like it's more important now than ever for my generation, millennials, anyone else thinking about creating platforms to really be serious about a personal brand?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Well, I think part of it is that, you know, the playing field has been leveled by all these things. So you can be a small business. You know, like I've gotten projects this year that 20 years ago would have only gone to big firms.
Mm.
You know, that's the only people that could compete. So the playing field has been level. And so you can compete now if you're a small business with a big firm, and if you're a big firm with a small business, but you do have to have a very clear, well-established brand, because if you can't communicate who you are, you know, personally, as a business, etc., people have no patience. They're just like, they're gone. They're out of there.
Right.
So I think it's more important than ever, because we have a lot less it's like it's a double-edged sword. We get in front of more people, but we have a lot less time to show them who we are.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, this paradigm shift that's happened, especially with marketing and branding, what happens is a lot of people now are focused on developing that long-term platform as opposed to a short-term strategy. Right.
Right.
You know, just the buzz and that goes. What are some of those best ways to actually ensure that your platform is sustainable and lasts through the constant wave and shifts of new media?
Well, I think one of the big mistakes that people make, in my experience, quite frankly, is that they don't really think through their brand at a deep enough level. So people spend, like, they put less time on the upfront part, thinking through their brand in terms of what it really means and how to express it and all. You know, in my model, there are 7 different ways you have to talk about your brand. And it takes me, by the way, a day. It takes me an entire day of conversation to tease out what those 7 things are with somebody, for an individual or a business. It's not just like a quick conversation.
Right.
So I think people are very in a hurry to just get to the quick elevator pitch and then move on and start promoting their brand and their business. But the problem is, if you don't have your platform solid, you know, if you don't have a clearly articulated brand in these in-depth ways, and then you don't have a place to send people, whether that's LinkedIn or a website or your social media, that's not only consistent but well-developed around those brand messages and well-positioned, then you're just basically doing a lot of spin. I think that's a huge mistake that people make.
Yeah, yeah. And what are those 7 things that you normally work on?
Well, definitely I work with people on what I call the anchor statement, which is what a lot of people call the elevator pitch, but it kind of answers the question, who are you? You know, that's an important question to answer. You know, again, in the brand mapping strategy, the design, build, and accelerate your brand, the reason I wrote the book was that I'd really found that this was a powerful way to think about their brands, and I couldn't sit down with everyone,
yeah,
you know,
obviously,
and
yeah,
do that. But, you know, the other part of that, besides the anchor statement, is I'm a very big fan in when I work with people in the brand mapping strategy on what, you know, your unique branding proposition. I don't believe in ruthless competition, but I do think that if you're great at what you do or you make or you build or you offer, that there's enough work to go around. But I do believe in positioning, specifically in articulating, you know, how your brand speaks uniquely to the needs of your audience. And so just like there's unique brand selling propositions, I'm a fan of unique branding propositions.
Yeah.
That's another kind of piece or element to the brand mapping process I created. And then the third one is what I call brand tone and temperament. You know, that's really what's the fundamental character or disposition or outlook or spirit or qualities that defines your brand. And by the way, that's very important to know, because when you know that, that influences all of your brand identity, your color palette, your logo type, your fonts, your logo mark, your web design. And a lot of people don't think that through before they design that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's also, I also look at what your brand personality is, you know, which is, it's this quality that's been consistent across the board with you for almost as long as you can remember. You know, it's well, I call that the weather you bring with you. And then there's your brand energy, you know, which is, I identify these sort of 12 archetypes that I noticed of people's contribution that was at the essence of their brand. And really understanding that helps you, because then you know what you're bringing to the party, but you also know where you need help. And then there's things like people's, what's your signature story? How did you get to where you are? What's your signature service? What's the one thing that you really bring? You know, all of that is part of what you have to assess in your brand.
Yeah. We're talking to Karen Tyree Leland here, who I describe as a legend in the personal brand and industry. But the thing with Karen, and the thing that's really exciting for me is, as someone who straddles the personal brand as well as the company brand, because helping with companies develop inclusive cultures, is CIOs and C-suite executives found a lot of benefit from your book. In fact, I was reading a review from the CIO of State Fund Insurance. And you know, she had said it's a must read for any C-level executive, because it's full of practical advice for any leader looking to enhance their executive presence and transform their team. Where other people focus on personal brands, you have this insane ability to do the both, personal and company brands. Why do you feel like leaders need this?
Well, I mean, I think leaders need personal brands, because just the way people have to sort of make a statement for themselves in the world with their personal brand, we're living in a world where people also have to make a statement within their companies. You know, like, I've had so many executives call me and go, I'm just not getting included in on the projects, or I'm not getting included in on the career path I should be on, because I'm not really branding myself within my own company. So I think it's really important from that perspective. I also think it's important to have a personal brand as an executive, because today, you know, think about it. You go to a conference and you know you're going to meet with somebody, right?
Yeah.
What's the first thing you're going to do?
I mean, at a conference, I'm going to meet, I, say hi, meet a company card? What do you do?
I mean, before you get to the conference, you know you're going to meet them at the conference. What's the first thing
research,
you're
going
to do?
Research. You're
going to look them up on LinkedIn.
Research, and what do you do? And even I'll even probably think about talking points I could bring up based on what they said on LinkedIn.
Yeah. You're going to do that on LinkedIn. And so what happens is that people sort of forget that that it's a really critical thing to have that personal brand established outside of the organization as well. I just don't think there's any option today. I think in the world we live in today, you have to be doing that. To not be doing that is really to be being neglectful of your career.
I couldn't agree with you more. And the reason I wanted you to bring that up is just because I'm in these fields sometimes, and a lot of times I hear a lot of executives say, I don't want this to be about me. It's not about me. It's not about that. And the shift is, I'm not saying it's about you. It's more about how your leadership is perceived throughout the company, and how that can inspire people to do what you ultimately want to achieve, which is, profits, the company brand, and making sure that you're sustainable in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, there really isn't this, people have this false division between like the personal brand and the business brand. But the truth is that it's more like what I call a parallel brand. There's a parallel brand between that runs on parallel tracks between the business brand and the personal brand. And the strongest brands are when your executive or your personal brand is in a very harmonious parallel with your business brand. And that's true whether you're an entrepreneur, an executive in a Fortune 500 company, a CEO, etc.
It's a parallel brand. I love this. Let's talk more about some life changes in your life. So the most significant ones that I can think of, and please help me fill in the gap, is your divorce and then the death of your dad. How did those two things really impact how you branded, rebranded, or became parallel, or make those things work in parallel?
Well, for me, I had in the space of, I think it was 8 or 9 months, I left a marriage after 22 years, got a divorce. That's a long time.
Yeah.
I moved from San Francisco to New York. I moved back from New York to San Francisco, and my father passed away. That all happened in like 8 months.
Wow.
One of my friends says, she says, those are the things they tell you you shouldn't even, that even one of them could kill you. She said, let alone all of them at the same time.
Yeah.
So, there was a lot of change in a very, very, and a lot of significant change in a lot of, in a very, very short period of time. And, as anyone who's been through even any of those can imagine, or even anything close can imagine, everything kind of stops. Your whole world sort of stops as you take stock. And I think for me, part of it was just because I was grieving. I was grieving for my marriage. I was grieving for getting divorced. I was grieving for my father passing. I was grieving, moving and moving again. It was just a lot of unsteadiness in a very, and my stepfather died also within that 8 months.
Wow.
So it was and my stepfather and my father died within 2 weeks of each other. It was not a fun 8 months.
Wow.
But it really made me stop and take stock of, I had to create a new vision for my life of what I wanted my life to be, because the life I thought I was going to have, that wasn't the life I was turning out I was having. And even though a lot of those choices, well, of course, my father dying wasn't my choice, but even though a lot of those choices were mine, the choice to leave my marriage, the choice to move, the choice to, move back, they were all my choices, a lot of them, but they were still huge changes, and they still had, grief and processing associated with them. And so for me, I really had to stop and look at what kind of person was I? What kind of person did I want to be? What was important to me? How did I want to spend the next period of my life, et cetera? So it was a very reflective period, and it really did change how I, when I say it changes how I branded myself, it wasn't some like little marketing thing that I did. It really changed how I saw my future as a person, and that changed my personal brand.
Wow. And thanks for sharing that. Thanks for being so forthright with that. I think a lot of times the reason why I wanted you to share that, our personal brand or our brand story, they're all, they're all related, and they have to do with who we are and stories that affect us. And those pivotal moments in our lives and the decisions we make then, those are the things that can really influence how you show up online, physically, and anywhere else in the world. So I'm glad you shared that. But that experience led you to think about this thing that you call the contribution gap.
Yes.
Can you talk about what the contribution gap is?
Yeah, it led me to really to this thing I call the contribution gap, which I've done TEDx talks about, and I've spoken a lot of different companies about, which is this idea that we get our contribution generally very wrapped up in two things. And one thing we get our contribution wrapped up in is our roles, all right, the roles that we inhabit. And they can be personal or professional. So it's how we define ourselves, the I ams, right? I am a wife, I am a daughter, I am...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
A mother, I am a vice president of X, I am an oncologist, you know, whatever it is, whatever roles we have. So one of the things is people think their contribution is the role they have. The problem with that is if you lose the role, then you can have a real identity of identity crisis of contribution. But the other piece of that gap is created by people thinking that we think our knowledge is what creates what we have to contribute. The playwright Gretchen Kier calls that the worlds you know. So it's like we have this knowledge that we're clear about. Like I know the world of personal branding. Like some people would say I'm an expert in that. You know, I know the world of book writing. You know, I've written 9 books. So, you know, that's a world I know. You know, I know the world of being married. I also know the world of being divorced. I know the world of living in New York.
Right.
I know the world of traveling to, you know, to Russia. I mean, there's a lot of worlds that I know. But those worlds don't define my contribution. And the problem is people often think that their knowledge or the worlds that they know are what define their contribution. And the problem is those two things, the roles and the worlds, tend to create a gap in our contribution so that our contribution isn't necessarily lined up with really what our deepest gift is. And I have found that when people are really truly living their deepest gift, they're making their greatest contribution, and the roles and the worlds we know come and go, you know, they change, but we're still very rooted and grounded in that contribution. And people with the strongest brands, in my opinion, really know what their deepest contribution is, and they're rooted in that, and they're not trying to make their contribution about their roles or the worlds they know.
People with the strongest brands often know what their deepest contribution is.
That's yeah, they know what's at the heart of their contribution. They're not relying on their roles or the worlds they know. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense, and it's so powerful. I can't express to you how much of an honor this is for me. But the reason why is whenever I'm one of those nerds that sort of watches every video of someone that I really really admire, and I would listen to a lot of those stories. And a lot of what it reminded me of was, you know, I've had a near-death experience. I've been fired twice. I've lived across all these countries.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything all went back to – I've lived in a military dictatorship. So everything all went back to my 10-year-old self when I asked myself what I wanted to do in the world and how I wanted to show up. And it was all around the idea of helping building the next set of global leaders. And I felt like the best way to do that was to help people communicate across cultures. And that's been the story and the deepest contribution that I want to help in any way, whether it's me being the CEO of my consultancy that helps with companies and diversity and inclusion, whether it's me being a speaker, whether it's me being a writer, or me having this podcast where people from different parts of the world get to share their stories. The underlying theme behind that is getting people to show up and embrace what it is about them that's different. That's why the mission statement of the podcast and everything I do is use your difference to make a difference. And so, yeah, it really tied in a bow. I remember reading your book and you said that, and I was like, yeah, that's why all those difficult experiences were easy to stomach, not easy to stomach, but I didn't feel discouraged to give up because I felt like I was working for a deeper purpose.
No, and I think it's particularly a problem I find among millennials is they tend to be extremely oriented around their knowledge and what they know and around what role they have. And the truth is you can't hang if you hang the hat of your contribution on that, ultimately you're screwed because those two things always change.
You know, so, you know, I'm a millennial, so I hope that we are starting to change that shift. I hope more people start to listen to podcasts and think like, yes, Karen, you're right. I'm going to change my mindset because you're going to explain these 12 brand archetypes. The fixer, the facilitators, the mentors, the storytellers, the synthesizers, the connectors, the visionaries, the motivators, the makers, the advocates, the implementers, and the interpreters. Now, I don't know that we have enough time to do all that, but what is the genesis behind these 12 brand archetypes? And is it possible for people to be more than one?
Well, here's what I tell people. You know, every time I speak, like when I gave this talk at Yale, I was like, I know you guys are overachievers and you think you should be all 12. but the truth is that people are generally excel and at the core of their contribution is one or two. It doesn't mean we don't have access to all 12. We all have access to all 12. So let me just say, it isn't like if the heart of your contribution is that you're someone who's basically, you know, a connector, that you can't be a facilitator. You can. But so you have access to all 12, but generally if people look at their history and generally if people look at their from back to when they were a kid, or generally if people do a timeline, which I often have people do in my workshops, of their successes, they'll see a common theme of one or two of those energies. And knowing that is pretty powerful for people because this way people don't get limited, but they get very they have the ability then to see what's really there. And by the way, it means that they know that they need other people for those other qualities. So they know other people they need to bring in for those other qualities.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, as I was reading that and I was studying all this, I was struggling to just narrow it down to two because a lot of my work is telling stories. And I do believe I'm a connector as well as a visionary. And then I was like, but I make stuff. And I facilitate things, and I mentor other people. So it is very interesting. Like you said, I guess in my generation, we tend to think that we have all those elements of we can do all 12. But you're saying that at the core, we're probably one or two with shades of the others.
Yeah, and sometimes they're what I call nested. So for example, if I could say this about myself, I'm a fantastic facilitator. Like companies, when they hire me, you know, love the facilitation I do. But the reason I'm a great facilitator is because my core contribution really is around structure and clarity. That's what I bring. So what makes me a good facilitator is really my core contribution, which is I'm just great at structure and clarity.
Yeah.
I just happen to be great at getting groups of people to that as well as individuals. But in essence, really, it's not that I'm a facilitator. That's not my core contribution. It's really structure and clarity. And as part of that, I'm good at being able to do that in groups of people. Does that make sense?
No, it does. It does. It does. And you cover this in your book and other workshops right on your website. So, you know, if you definitely want to learn more about this, and I encourage you all to learn, it is fascinating seeing and just hearing a lot of the differences between this. Karen also talked about this in her TEDx talk that she gave at Yale, and I'll make sure I put that in the show notes, TEDx Yale. But Karen, it does make sense. It makes complete sense. And I think your ability to explain that sometimes it's uncanny, but I think it's one that many people haven't really internalized. Like they actually have that.
No, and I think people resist it sometimes because they say, well, I don't want to be like a box and like a Myers-Briggs. So it's not like a Myers-Briggs thing. It's not like you are one or the other. Everyone has access to all 12, and we're stronger in some than in the others. These are all qualities we have. But essentially, I have seen that people have generally one or two of those archetypes are at the core of their contribution. And part of why that's important is if you're on a team, you don't want everyone on the team being strong in the same archetype. You want a mix of people. You want a diversity of that contribution.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what do you say to people like myself who who would always say, we're multi-passionate, me and Marie Folio. What do you say?
Well, I'm multi-passionate too. You know, I mean, here's the thing. I've been an actor. I've been a management consultant. I've been a PR person. I run a marketing and branding firm. I've been a writer. I've been an artist. I mean, I've done a lot of different things. So yeah. I don't think it's about being multi-passionate. I think that it's about, usually there was some core thread for people that has gone through all those things. It's just that the form it took changed.
Facts.
And finding the core thread is, I think, what's empowering and important. Like, for me, the core thread has always been, you know, expressing my own creativity and supporting other people in expressing theirs.
Yeah.
And by creativity, I don't necessarily mean just painting or writing or, you know, some people's creativity is expressed in business.
Yeah.
So I think it's knowing what that thread is really critical.
Yeah. I mean, you help people show up the way they really need to be showing up.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing gift, by expressing their creativity. So no, this is so much fun for me. I could ask questions all day, but let's go into that artistry, the acting aspect of your life. So I think in movies, I think in TV shows, a lot of my formative years were spent sort of living vicariously through a lot of characters. But I heard a rumor about you. It's not bad. But
now I'm scared. Yeah, go ahead.
You're a big Game of Thrones fan.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed.
You probably watched it twice.
I've watched the entire series. Actually, you know what? Some of the seasons I've watched two or three times. I think I've watched the entire series twice, and I just started watching the entire series again from the beginning because I want to be ready for when it comes back again in 2019. I am so obsessed with Game of Thrones.
I don't blame you at all, because I am obsessed with it. And first of all, the show that I'm obsessed with as much as you're obsessed with Game of Thrones is one that throws people off. It is called One Tree Hill. They took it off Netflix. But anyways, I love Game of Thrones so much. In fact, I've used it in workshops and leadership seminars, because I think the characters are so fascinating. The houses. My personal favorite character, I might not be the most, you know, I feel like I'm like a Jon Snow, right? You know, the moral, yes. moral compass, always doing the right thing, even to your own detriment. And sometimes, you know, leads to you getting stabbed and things like that. I'm curious, though. The reason why I brought this up is, who do you relate to the most on that show?
Well, see, I don't think Jon Snow's the moral compass of the show. I think Tyrion Lannister's the moral compass
you
of the show.
You think it's Tyrion?
I think Tyrion's the moral compass.
Okay, wow. I don't know. Okay. So is that who you relate to the most?
No. Who do I relate to the most, like, personally?
Yeah, in terms of, personally, who do you feel like, if you were in that world, who do you feel like you would be?
Who would I be?
Yeah.
That is a really good question, and I'd have to really think about that.
I love.
I'm not sure it's any of the women, because they're all, in their own way, really hideous. I'd probably be Sir Davos.
Oh, wow.
He's kind of making sure everybody's coordinated and connected and powerful. And, you know, he's not the best sword fighter, but he's really good at getting everybody to be reasoned and figure everything out and be structured. I'd probably be Sir Davos Seaworthy or Seaworth or whatever his name is.
Wow. That, you know what? That, I have not thought of him that way. That is true.
Yeah, he's always kind of why don't we put this one together and that one together? And, you know, I think that's probably who I would be if I was. It's not who I'd want to be, but that's probably who I would be.
Yeah. So. No. It's, you know, the reason with Jon Snow is that I have this in your world, when you are doing the brand archetypes, you know, the people that are the idealists.
Yes.
I'm not sure which that was. Maybe that was the visionary, or, you know, but that's who I've, you know, sort of always been. So I was like, man, even if I know people would hate me for just doing this right thing randomly.
Well, the one I think who gets to have the most fun, even though she's horrible, is Melisandre. Because everyone's scared of her, and at the same time, she gets to be an influencer, and at the same time, she gets to have fun sex. So I think Melisandre's the one having the most fun.
She does. Yeah.
Except for her unfortunate misstep where she burned someone's child alive. That was not so good.
Yeah.
But
among the many other things that Game of Thrones says. And then with Cersei, for some reason, she has, I don't, you know, me being an idealist, I don't get it, but there are a lot of Cersei fans out there.
Oh, she's so horrible.
She's horrible, but there's so many people. And that's the fascinating thing. And the other reason I brought Game of Thrones is because I think that's a fascinating case study for brands. If you look at every season, determining whether it's, Littlefinger before he, his demise. Sorry, spoilers. there are several people that have been able to brand themselves in a certain way. And I know listeners are wondering why I brought that question. This is why. Brand themselves a certain way, and it led to success or failure. And it has to do with almost every single thing you've talked about today. Knowing what you're fighting for, who you're fighting for, why it matters, and making sure that you're staying true to who you are ultimately.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think it's funny because I've been talking to my editors at Inc. about doing a piece on Game of Thrones and lessons on branding from Game of Thrones. But I'm going to wait till it comes back and do it, when it comes back for the final series. But the thing about Game of Thrones, and I was with somebody the other day and they were saying, I don't know why it's so popular. It's so violent. And there's this and that and the other thing. And I said, you know what? Have you ever read any Shakespeare?
Yeah.
I said Shakespeare is full of violence, anger, family feuds, incest. I mean, it's very Shakespearean in a sense. And I think part of the strength of the brand of that franchise is that it's very Shakespearean. I mean, it has a lot of these themes to it. And so it is a very interesting look. Both the show itself and the characters are an interesting look at the way identity and brands get formed and then the impact that they have, which is why I think it's so unfreaking believably popular.
It is. It's in some weird way, some people can see themselves in one or two of the characters, and whether that's a good or bad thing, it does allow for a fun sort of escapism. I certainly appreciate that. Thank you for engaging with me in that.
Always a pleasure to talk about Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones is one of my favorite things. As we're getting ready to wrap up here, I'm a millennial, and we live in a very interesting time, right? Globalization, digitalization, no one's listened to anyone, but there's, at the same time, this increasing diversity of opinions of people, and people are mixed. What is your one message for us as we start to take on the mantle of leadership?
Well, I think the most important thing is just to remember that there are some things that come with time and experience, that, everything can't just be gotten by a book or by clever ideas. There are some things that, it's like steel gets tempered, So living through things, having things go wrong, having experiences that don't quite turn out that way, those are all things that temper you over time, and they give you, they give you wisdom. And so it's not an intellectual pursuit. There's a certain amount of wisdom that comes just with time, and there's no substitute for that, And so it's important to recognize that everything you think you know, even though it's great and valuable and useful, there's also going to be things you're going to learn with time, because that's the nature of time.
Right. Time, patience, and definitely remaining focused is key. Karen, my mission statement, and the reason why I do anything that I do is use your difference to make a difference. I believe we're all uniquely capable of making an impact and some contribution to the world. So I'd like to ask my guest this question. How do you use your difference to make a difference?
Well, I use my difference to make a difference in terms of creativity, in terms of really expanding the creative expression in the world. And again, that doesn't mean necessarily painting or art or theater, although it can include those, but whatever someone's act of feeling creative is, that's how I use my difference.
Awesome. No, this has been fun for me, and I'll make sure I put all this in the show notes. But before I read out the title of your book one last time, where can people find out, where can people reach out to you? Where can people find out more about you online?
They can go to KarenLeland.com. That's a place to find me online. And then the book can be gotten on Amazon, the Brand Mapping Strategy, Design, Build, and Accelerate Your Brand. They can get that on Amazon.
Awesome. And are you on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn?
I am on Twitter. It's at K Karen F. Leland on Twitter. That's the best place to reach me online. And then for Twitter, and then people can find me on LinkedIn as well.
Awesome. Awesome. I'll make sure I put that in the show notes. This has been a true honor.
Oh, Karen. Me too.
Thank you so much. I don't know that you'll ever understand how important this was to me, but thank you. I really appreciate that.
Thank you for such a great and fun interview.
Thank you. The pleasure is mine. The pleasure is mine. Ladies and gentlemen, till next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.